How's everybody?
Good. Yeah. What's on your mind this morning, other than emails and clusters?
And clusters. There you go. No kidding. So I've got my first kind of 12-4-2 meeting with one of my FAs on Tuesday. And so I'm getting prepared for that. And he is probably the most difficult FA in my branch. Okay. He's the one that when I speak, I worry that he might be outside my door listening. Right? So anyway, yeah.
So when do you have this scheduled for?
Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock.
All right. Here's my recommendation in the future. When you have somebody like that, and this is a difficult person, right?
Yeah, he's a difficult person.
And definitely. He talks a lot.
He will. He complains a lot.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the rule. Always schedule it for 4 o'clock.
You know what? I should have remembered that. You and I talked about that before.
Here's what you're going to do, though. You're going to have another appointment at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Okay. And during this torture, which is what it will be.
Yeah.
You keep thinking about 9 o'clock. It'll be over.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice. So you have something on the back end to look forward to, right?
You got to keep focusing on that. It's going to be over. Nod, listen. Mm-hmm. Ask interesting questions. Try and get him into his passion. My guy loved IU, loved Indiana University. He loved IU, and he loved talking about it. And if I could get him to talk about that, then most of the things that were made up that he wanted to talk about would go away.
Mm-hmm.
I've got another team we were working with, and we were talking about asking important questions, profiling clients, doing financial planning, getting to the heart of what's important, and asking them about their philanthropic giving and what they did. Now that leads us to the opportunity when you have time to be on, you know, you're already very involved, but the point is that if somebody weren't involved in the community and wanted to get more involved, they should ask their clients what it is that, you know, I'm thinking about spending a little more time, involved in the community. I've got to be judicious about it. So I'm thinking of joining two boards, one arts organization and one philanthropic organization. What are you involved in? And what's been your experience? So, you know, what a lot of times when we're looking to impress the client, the best thing to do is to ask them for advice. So we go back to the advice model.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things to do is to ask his advice. That'll throw him completely off. Okay. I'm thinking about getting a little more involved in the community. I have a little more time. I'd like to get on. What's been your experience with philanthropic organizations, the community, and, you know, just, I think that'd be a brilliant thing to do. I mean, you probably already know it. So you could skip all that and just go to, tell me about your experience in your, you know, with your work with IU. If you're going to do it over again, how would you do it? What do you think? You know, I'm going to write an article on philanthropic giving, and you seem to be a guy that really does it very well. Tell me about it. What do you do? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Try and figure out where his business has come from. And then ask him for advice on that. Trying to help out, you know, trying to understand how, you know, you've been very successful. You've been very good at this. What do you think, you know, led to that success? What did you do? Now you've turned the table completely from, let's talk about everything that's wrong with me, the community, the office, the firm, and life, to what's right, how did it work, tell me about it, maybe we can duplicate it, maybe I can help you do it even better. And I love that term, the unconscious competence. Mm-hmm. Sometimes by talking about it, Derek, and you're the client now, you're the other FA, I say to Derek, you know, sometimes we do things very well, but we don't know what we did. It's very hard to articulate it. So sometimes what the best thing to do is to talk about it. Let's just talk about what you did, and maybe there's a process here that we could duplicate, or maybe there's an opportunity here that we could replicate. Maybe what you did was, we call it unconsciously competent. You were brilliant at it, but you didn't know what you did, so it's very difficult to repeat it. And so what we do as coaches is help you to understand what it is that you did, and then we kind of create a process around that so we can duplicate it.
Yeah, that's a good start. It gives me a strategy.
Yeah, you're going to ask him for his business plan or something. He's going to say, tell me what the market's going to do, and I'll tell you how much business I'm going to do. You know, some smart-ass remark like that. I had all that, you know. So I wouldn't bother with that stuff. I would just try and make some progress in terms of what he was doing already. Don't try and change him. Don't try and just try and feed off of, plant something that, you know, water something that's growing already. Something that he's doing well, that he's proud of.
I like that.
And then watch the clock. And
yeah.
You could even make it 50 minutes.
I've got to prepare for my next meeting.
Right. We're doing these 12-4-2, so we're trying to, you know, stay on schedule here.
You know, I like that, water something that's growing. I think I'm never going to forget that one. It's good.
That's the first time I've ever said that.
Is that right? Very first time?
Yeah, sometimes you come up with stuff, you know, you just...
It's originality day, right?
Yeah, it's just original train of thought, you know. But it's kind of good, isn't it?
That was very good. Was that really seriously an original idea that you just... You ever seen these professors that have people, students that just walk behind them and just write down the things that they might say every once in a while?
Somebody would say, I would do that. I'd give a speech and they'd say, you know, and it would be really, you know, I'd be in a really good place, right? It was a good audience, and I knew my topic cold. A lot of times when I'd go around the different offices, I'd give the same speech. And what was interesting was to measure the reaction of the audience to your speech. The first time you gave it, it wasn't that great because it wasn't that great. Right. So it turns out that about the fourth or fifth time you give it, you're at a peak, and then it kind of goes like this because you get sick of it. So what you want to do is have somebody record it right in here. And somebody came up to me afterwards and said, that was so good. Can I have a copy of your speech? And I go, yes, when I write it.
I hope you had a tape recorder.
My friend Larry Wilson used to say, I said, Larry, how many speeches do you have? He said, Rob, I have the same speech. I just give it 20 different ways.
I get that. I understand it, you know, because you kind of make it more interesting and punchy where you think it should help, you know.
Yeah, you try and get some interesting stories in. I mean, stories, you know, we used to say, make a point, tell a story. If the story can be funny, then it's great. It's, I took a year-long course on how to be a super professional public speaker. And I learned a lot. The point of it was, is that you're primarily an entertainer. And if you make a few points, congratulations. You change a few lives. I understood that and I get it. I like it. I enjoy doing that, but it doesn't compare to actually coaching and making a real difference. You know, I don't want to, I'm not doing it for the money to be paid to entertain. Okay. I'm not that good. If I was that entertaining, I'd probably continue to do it. But I just, I don't know. I love doing it, but I'd much rather actually coach and help.
Yeah.
And teach, you know, so I'm really a coach. And I, even though I keep trying to be more entertaining, but it's a really hard, that's a hard skill. It's a hard thing to learn.
Yeah. I've tried to do, I was a big Toastmasters person in my younger years. I did it for years. But I remember trying to do the entertaining speech, and I'm usually pretty entertaining just when I'm not thinking about it. But when you try to prepare and consciously be entertaining, it's
really hard.
I really fell on my face.
Yeah, I did too. I did too. It took your material you have to write. Do you know what they spend, like a comedian will spend a year working on 15 minutes of jokes. Mm-hmm. A year. Mm-hmm. It's insane. Mm-hmm. How hard they work. And they work like 12 hours a day.
Right.
You know, they'll work 8 hours writing and then 4 hours in some dumpy shop giving jokes that fall flat, right?
Right.
Takes a tremendous courage. I tip of the hat to them, or some real psychological damage as a young child. And then they, either way, they do fine. Anyway, let's get to the work. What did you find from this week that was,
You know, like I said, I feel like I'm at least a couple weeks behind right now, but after the scheduling tool, you know, that's been great. I feel like it's just another good source of communication. So that's been very helpful. Clients have been very receptive to it. You know, I'm trying to think. I wrote down some notes before I got in here. You know, things that I think that was the biggest for this week, because that's what I've been using the most. But I've been following up on some of these things, and I'm getting referrals right now, and it's almost like getting in the way, kind of in a sense. And I can't be the only one who's having this. I mean, it's weird. It's like, it's a great thing, and it's also an issue because you're trying to juggle the whole thing. Like, you know, we started talking about the multi-generational planning with one of my, you know, clients who's a dentist, and we've been friends for a long time, and he's done great with us. Next thing you know, we're trying to meet with his parents and find out his dad has Alzheimer's, and they're worried about these things. And but I had the chance now to refer them back to my attorney friend who I mentioned last week, you know, and he and I have already started having that discussion about, you know, we've got to sit down and figure out what kind of clients we're looking for. And he is super responsive right now to my emails, you know, as I'm talking with him, because it's not a lot of fluff. It's like, I've got somebody you need to talk to, and he's getting right back to me on it. So that's been good. And then, you know, another meeting and trying to use some of this, and we'll see. So this is one of my, just a cold prospect that I've, began trying to work with. I've really focused more on the service model of all this, you know, with 12-4-2 and what are you going to receive and that kind of stuff. And he's going to be the one that is talking to other firms at the same time. So I'm really kind of putting it out there, and we'll see. You'll see if I get the business, you know, but that's a $2 million relationship. So we'll see. But I'm letting my success get in the way of my success, in some ways. Right. But then I do think about what, you know, when we were talking about the idea that it is a year process, it's not, I mean, it doesn't. Right.
Don't make yourself crazy trying to keep up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cindy and I talked about that, and it's.
Yeah, because you can, don't procrastinate, but don't. It was interesting that I rode with my son-in-law this morning. He talked about these CEOs of tech companies, and one of their mantras is to make 3 decisions a day. Well, you know, you're going to make 50 decisions today, right? I mean, I never counted the number of decisions I had to make, because that was the business I was in. And you're in the business of making lots and lots of decisions. But think about making 3 conscious decisions. Okay. So think of what does that mean? That means probably 3 things that you've put off making a decision on. You're smiling.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've got things, and I do put them off every day. I'll do that tomorrow. I'll call that person. I've got some, you know, I've got some problematic clients that I'm afraid to call.
Well, one of the
things. There's not a lot of them, thank God, but I mean, there's just a few of them.
Well, just think about it for a minute. Is that somebody that you should not have as a client?
Absolutely.
I mean, you've got a choice here now. This is like the moment, right? You're gonna move your practice from one ship to another, and you can leave anybody that you want on the old ship. Who should be left there when you move to this new ship, right? Because it's hard to get them from here to here. So you're not gonna take anybody that's, you know, you gotta. Put them along one of those lines, you know, to get them across. you're not gonna make it. You're not gonna take anybody but the important people. These guys are gonna be fine on this old ship, right? Who are we taking to the new ship, right? Well, it better only be people you like, and people are easy to work with, because you can make up the money. You can't make up the psychological damage they do to you. That hurts everybody. Everybody that day, when they call and they wreck your day, that wrecks the day for everybody. So it's not just you that's getting hurt, your family, your other clients. Everybody's getting damaged by those people, because they are not givers. They're not nice people. And so the question is, why are they in my practice? They were there because I needed them in the beginning, but frankly, I don't need them now. So why do I still have them? Out of guilt? You're rewarding bad behavior by keeping them? You know, somebody's mean to your staff or mean to you. No, this is not a marriage. You can divorce anytime. And this is the time. This is the time. We talk about segmentation. We're not just segmenting out small clients. We're segmenting out bad clients, negative human beings, energy vampires. Really important. You're creating the practice of the future. your ideal practice, your, what would it look like? How many clients do you have? I had a rule that this was seriously, this is back in 1973. I had a rule that I only wanted, when I opened up my book, I only wanted smiley faces. Okay. So I had all these clients because I used to open up 15 accounts a month. That was our minimum. That was my goal, 15 accounts a month. And I'd open up 22 accounts a month and I'd win the new account contest and all that stuff. Why? It's simple. I just went out and worked, you know, I cold called and cold called in person because I thought they'd like me and they did. So I'd open their accounts. Anyway, so I had all these books, right? And then I took one book and that was my A book. Then in 73, and I put all my good clients in there and then I just didn't call these guys. Just attrition, you know, go away.
Want them to go away. Sure.
Yeah. And so I had a nice little book. I didn't segment them. I should have, but I just kept that book in that way, because I was amazingly victim of client psychology. They could throw me off for a couple of days if I had a bad client. I'm just too emotional. I'm too sensitive. I've gotten much better, but when I started, I was somebody could wreck my day easily. So I said, whoa, this isn't good. I can't afford that. I got to be up all day. I got to be positive. So I got rid of them.
When did you realize that, though? I mean, was that back in the 70s?
I started in 1972, 1973, I did this.
Okay. But you did realize your emotional nature, and you did make the correlation at that time that they could wreck your day.
They used to call me Roller Coaster Rob.
Wow, no kidding. So yeah. I don't put on that face to other people. I think to most people, I'm pretty even keeled, and I try not to have a reaction, you know, but especially when you get into dealing with somebody being a complete jerk. I'm not talking about necessarily clients, but clients too occasionally, but more the FAs, you know, when they're having a bad day or something like that. And I've got really just two in particular, one major, and he's the guy I'm going to coffee with, but it can blow up my day. I didn't sleep worth a shit last night.
Gee.
I'm thinking about this asshole. It's just but he's a nice guy. He's got potential. He's got passion. He's successful. So I look at all the positives about him, but he is relentless as far as just the negativity and just the hammering on all the everything that's bad. It's just relentless. And I told somebody this morning, you know, I have that coffee meeting every Wednesday. You know, I think I told you about that. And so that's my pastor and my best friend. You know, we talk about the stuff that I said, you know, I've spent years. I try to find the ends around his personality, you know, so you're always trying to like, and you're like you're talking about, but never once is it the other way around. You never get it's almost like a tsunami that you're trying to swim through, and you occasionally catch a tree or two, but the tsunami doesn't stop. You just keep getting wave after wave after wave. So So I do a good job, like I said, keeping everything even keel, especially with clients and other people. And even with him, I try not to let myself get rattled, even though inside you can feel like this, you know, I mean, it almost feels like an earthquake, like you're just, you know, you're ready to, or a volcano, you're just ready to erupt. So I can let that, like I said, it translated into my sleep. You know, last night, and I woke up at 2:30 in the morning, and we just went walking around the house and thinking, how can I possibly let this guy be on my mind at 2:00 in the morning? This is insane. So we had talks this morning about, is this management thing even worth it? You know, because of, but it's because of one person. That's what makes me more irritated, is I let the one person who is probably, you know, on the radar, he spikes, it's just spikes, and then it subsides, it spikes and subsides. But how do you let him control that much of your emotional energy? You know, it just, I mean, it's insane. It really truly is sometimes insanity. So I was glad to hear you talking about that, because, you know, I do feel like I run a roller coaster like that, but only with certain people, in certain situations. So anyway.
Well, it's very real. For me, I couldn't fix them, because I don't want to be fixed. This suits them. But one of the things to keep in measuring is, how am I carrying that with me to other people? Okay. So when you woke up, were you your usual pleasant self to your wife, or were you a little short?
No, I was pretty nice. I made her a cup of coffee and she was in bed.
You can do that. That's really, really good. That's the risk of what you're talking about. Because I found the other day, in fact, my masseuse said, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "I just was on a call with some people that were frankly idiots."
Really?
It just annoyed me so much. I carried it, you know, out the door. Probably wasn't as nice to Marcia as I should have been, to my masseuse, where she found, you know, your whole right side is all jammed up. What's going on? And I go, "Oh, I just got off a call with some idiots." And, you know, it just was. So I can't, that's the problem. As long as you can compartmentalize it, even just yourself, congratulations, because I just wear it. And it'll take me a while to get over it. And so that's one of the things, that's why they call. Obviously, I wore it on my sleeve or they wouldn't have called me Roller Coaster Rob. You know, good markets, I'm up. I'm almost schizophrenic, right, in terms of, you know, what, up and down. And you know, bad markets, I'm good markets, I'm great.
Yeah.
Good client, I'm up. Bad client, I'm down. So I really had to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
The point, you know, I'm an eager learner. I was just recommending, and I haven't read it, but my friend Larry Wilson, which is part of your reading, part of your required reading, is a book called Play to Win. I highly recommend it because that's why I love Zoom. There you go. Okay. Play the Way by Larry Wilson. Okay. Now in here, he quotes a guy named Maxie Maltsby, who's a psychiatrist. And what frustrated Maxie was that he couldn't help enough people. Mm-hmm. Right. He was frustrated because, you know, there were so many psychologically damaged people and you could only see so many of them. So one of the things that he did was he created this ability to do self-analysis and basically self-cure. And what he would do, he was famous for taking well people that were really thinking wrong and fix them. They weren't schizophrenic. They didn't need chemicals. They weren't crazy. Okay. But they were really messed up in their thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And he would take like the children. He was famous for taking the child of a very wealthy person that was completely impossible to work with. You know, thrown out of every school and everything, took the kid and fixed him. And the kid turned out great. So, he's not well known. I don't think, I mean, that, you know, I just read it. He died in 2016. I just read his obituary. Cause I was thinking about it with my son-in-law. He's got some issues, right? Mm. He came from a father that quit everything, you know, so we talked about not quitting because my granddaughter was kind of getting bored with golf, and, you know, and I said, I just don't want her to quit. I let my son quit too many things. And now he blames me for letting him quit. So one of the things that we talked about was Maxie Maltby. And is this, you know, one of the questions he asked as part of your self-analysis, is this behavior in your best interest? You know, so one of the things that you might think about with your friend there that's impossible is just discuss this with him. Maxie Maltby he's black, which is really interesting. One of the foremost psychiatrists, though, head of the psychiatric department at, I think, Howard University. But anyway, so he has a series of questions that you ask yourself. Is this behavior moving you forward? Is this behavior in your best interest? And what you discover is that this, what I'm doing is I'm basically self-sabotaging myself.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So it's not in his best interest to have a terrible relationship with you and to make your life miserable, because you have the ability to help him. So why would he do that? Right? Why, what's in it for him? This is against his best interest. So why is he doing it? Because he's angry. He's got anger issues. Or
he needs
anger therapy or whatever. But it wouldn't hurt for him to read this Maxie Maltby's book or reading Larry Wilson's book. And I'll go back and find the chapter and verse in here where he talks about Maxie. But I met Maxie. Mm. You know, I moved to an island in Florida because of this guy, Larry Wilson.
Really?
I admired him so much. I wanted to be close. And so we were neighbors. And I'd go and see him in the morning and we'd talk for hours.
Well, that's convenient.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was.
It was wonderful. He was very generous. But anyway, so that might be that, you know, this doesn't hurt you, by the way, for your family or your friends or for anybody that you see is kind of self-destructing. You know, they're doing things that are not, and we're not talking about people that are mentally ill. Okay. But basically says what your behavior, since you're doing something that's not in your best interest, that's illogical. It's beyond illogical. It's insane. Right? So your behavior is in fact insane. So why would you do something that was insane? You're sane. Why would you conduct behavior that indicates that you're insane? Right?
I get it. Absolutely.
So it really is a way of checking yourself in your behavior as an adult and curing yourself. And we don't have to carry the map of our childhood into our adulthood. That's one of the premises of Larry's change model, that we all have a map that we carry with us from our childhood, which was formed when we were 5 and 6 and 10 years old. Why are we carrying that map, and is it a map that's accurate? All maps, by the way, are inaccurate the minute we write them. But a map that we built 20 or 30 or 40 years ago is by its nature completely out of date and inaccurate. And yet you're still relying on that map. So you need to, all of us need to do, is to check our map and see what we're relying on. Is this accurate information, or is it way outdated and inaccurate as to who we are and what where we are now today? So you're constantly updating your map and making it more accurate based on the reality of your life. Okay. So you're not blaming your parents for everything that's wrong with you because you're now an adult and you can make your own decisions, right? And they did the best they could at the time with the information that they had. Most of them were not psychiatrists.
My mom may have been. I don't know. My dad definitely not, but my mom may have been. Who knows?
My dad was at the ends. He was at the ends of the spectrum. He was fabulous at many things, and he was horrible at many things. He wasn't abusive, but he used abusive language, okay, which makes him abusive. But on the other hand, he was brilliant at helping grow really competitive kids. So he, you know, and get them ready for the world. But he thought he was going to die at any time. So he was constantly threatened by leaving us as immature kids, not ready for the horrible competitive world out there. So he wanted us ready.
Yeah. Right.
At very early ages, very mature at very early ages, which was understandable. He's a diabetic, and most diabetics in those days died at 40, right? So that he would have left his family unprepared. So he wanted us tough and ready to go and competitive as hell. And we are. I still have got to be careful how competitive I am. Right.
I see the good and the bad of it, you know, and with my own kids, you know.
Yeah.
My daughter is stealthily competitive. She'll beat you at everything that you didn't know you were even competing against.
That's a gift as long as she finds it in a game.
She does. She's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to mention to you and thank you. I told you my son's in prosthetics, and you know, in a lot of ways that is hands-on all the time. And this is just an aside. I just wanted to throw it out because I was talking to him yesterday morning and I talked to him again last night about it. And the whole idea of, you know, kind of transcending the hourly work of, you know, patient care, working with one patient at a time and thinking about other, you know, revenue streams and stuff like that. And so he called me up and he's, you know, working on, you know, like a real estate kind of thing. And his boss is thinking the same way that you had mentioned with him. And so he's getting a lot of that, but it's like his eyes were open sort of last night. And, but I mentioned, I said, you know, my coach and I talked about, and he's like, so, oh yeah, I get it. So he's trying to do some things like that. So
great.
I appreciate it.
Great. So I don't know where we're going with this, but.
No. I don't know either, but it's been great.
Yeah.
No, and I feel better prepared going into that meeting, I feel like too. So.
Yeah, you'll love Larry's work. And I just ordered, Max. I've never read Maxie's work. I've always just read it through Larry. So I'm going to get his book and read that as original thinking and see. Because I need to keep these, you know, these six questions in front of myself all the time. It's kind of like, you know, you ask yourself, is this behavior that I'm engaged in my best interest right now? Does this move me forward? Those are the two questions I can remember.
Right, no, I get it. You know, it's sort of like the, you know, the rotary questions, you know, and I have to keep that in my wallet. Because sometimes I have to go refer back to it, but is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it be, you know, will it build goodwill and better friendships? Is it better, be beneficial to all concerned? You know, it's those things that you try to use to guide you in your decisions and, you know, your
right.
Character. By the way, I'm reading Jim Lehrer's book.
Oh, good.
You're the new one.
And, oh, you are. Good.
Yeah, that's a... pretty intense. I mean, you can tell the guy has spent a life really exploring the idea of character.
Yeah.
And somebody who sorted through it. Probably an endless number of techniques for instilling character or bringing out character in people. And it just seems like a very refined thought process from somebody who you can. Now, I've watched him on YouTube also now. So I've tried to, you know, and just like I've watched you on YouTube too, and in certain, you know, speeches and things like that that you've given. But I mean, you can tell that he does everything because he cares deeply and believes in this stuff. It's not somebody who just came up with the idea that I can make money on doing a book if I did this.
No.
This is his life, right?
And this is his legacy. This would be his legacy time, you know.
Yes.
He's definitely into getting whatever thoughts are left in his brain out so that others can share it. You know, I know him well, and I'm this is one of the things I've procrastinated, right? This is one of my three decisions that I need to make. I need to call Jim and say, hey, I want you to be part of my mastermind group. I also want to do an interview with him on his new book, but I got to read it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So these are things he would love that, right? But I'm like, well, maybe he won't, and maybe he'll say no. And you know, you go through these silly things in your head, and what's the worst that can happen? He says no, and I'll be fine. And
yeah,
you know, but we all go through that. It doesn't matter who you are or how safe or comfortable you are. We all go through the same psychological gymnastics of, I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not young enough. I'm not, you know, and then you don't do it, right? And you say to yourself, what would you do if everybody always said yes? It's a great question.
Hmm. I don't realize how much you instill in that. This 30 minutes is, you know, 45 minutes.
I know.
Okay. I always get a little bit more out of you, Rob, and I appreciate it. So.
No, that's good.
Rob, you've been very profound today.
This guy brings you. Do you know when you have an associate where you have the same energy and you have kind of confidence that whatever you say is okay, and that they're really interested in what you have to say, then you get creative. You know, you. All that other stuff goes away and you get to your creative self. And which is very fun. And that's, you know, you can tell where my energy is. Do I want to teach lesson number 6? No. What do I want to talk about? I want to talk about Derek and what Derek's dealing with and some of his issues, right? And help Derek rather than, you know, teaching lesson number 6. We can teach lesson 6 anytime.
Yeah.
So, but we'll go back and just remember the 24-month calendar is a brilliant idea, both as a retention tool and as a marketing tool. Okay, so you can use it as a retention tool in terms of doing financial planning and getting the clients to appreciate the fact that you care enough to finish the financial plan, you know, talking about long-term care and risk management and beneficiaries and things like that, that makes them happy. Liability management, that makes them happy. Reduce their cost of borrowing, et cetera. But you can also then do a webinar on those topics for them and for their friends and get a big audience and make it a marketing month. Okay? So you can use it for both. And you can bring on a celebrity to talk about the topic, somebody that's well known in your firm, and do a webinar. And you can also do it with your CPA and your attorney and get their email list and your email list and combine them and just say, you know, I'm not going to solicit your email list, but if somebody from there calls me, I'm certainly not going to turn them down. But then you double your email list. So when you do the webinar on long-term care, you've got twice as many people on there than just your email list. Okay, you got their email list, and then you got the CPA's email list, and then you got the commercial realtors email list and the residential. Now you got a big list. And so when you do a webinar, you get a lot of people on there.
Okay.
So that's your marketing, your organization tip and your marketing tip all in one.
Yeah, no, I love the 24-month calendar enough. And that one piece, the scheduling tool, I don't know if you realize how big that is for me. That's massive. And shooting out that little, you know, look, this is what we're going to do in 2021. It's insane the reaction you get from people. Sometimes it's like, why didn't you do this before? You're really concerned? My God, I got doctor's appointments. I've got, you know, the vacation plan. I've got all these things. So if I know when I'm going to talk to you, it makes my life easier. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. He's, yeah, I schedule my doctor's appointments, right? You know, I mean, because our clients are older, they go to the doctor a lot, you know.
I got mine a year out.
Yeah, it's huge. So anyway, thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Have a good week.
Thanks, Rob. I do appreciate it. Okay.
Stay calm.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Andy. See ya.
Bye, Derek.
Bye.
Well, thanks, Rob.